Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast, brought to you in partnership with FootJoy. This is part two with our sit down with Duncan McCarthy, golf psychologist. If you haven't checked out part one, it's a fascinating insight into what golf psychology is and some of the stuff in the professional game. Go back and check out part one. Really good listen. And in this episode, this part, we're going to discuss much more about the amateur game and the psychology within the amateur game and how you can use it to improve your own game, the difference between outcome-driven goals and process-driven goals, and how you can use those things to elevate your own game and hopefully shave a few shots off your round. So sit back and enjoy.
Watch this.
It's not for me to tell people what to do at all. I'm here to support and advise. And if you want to take that on board, fine. If you don't, no problem. But one of the big things of my job is not what I say, but when I say it, is the timing, knowing when to say something, when to say a line, when to not say something. I'm not one of those just to jump on something because I got the phone out and what have you, but it does tell you where they might be at when you're not there. Because if everyone's on a heightened sense when they've got somebody in the team around them, so they try and do things a little bit better whether they know it or not. So then I see that and go, interesting. If I'm not here or somebody else isn't here and you're by yourself, how much are you actually on it? And that's when I'll broach that subject and go, how's your phone time been recently? And then I'm fortunate that I work with a lot of good people who don't sugarcoat it. They just tell you the truth. And they go, actually, I'm sick of having it in my hand all the time. And I'm like, oh, right, okay, maybe we just schedule a bit of time when you get back to the hotel room, you get back to your Airbnb and put your phone in the cupboard.
I suppose that's the worst bit, though, because it's not like if they were going back to their house, at least you've got like, oh, I could see the kids or I can watch my favorite show or whatever it is. But when you go back to a hotel room where there is nothing to do, it's okay.
Hotel rooms are very, very common, obviously, because of ease, convenience, etc. But there's a lot more doing Airbnb, especially in America, because it
better state of mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you can get up and make your own breakfast. You can order Uber Eats in and sit around a dinner table rather than going down to a restaurant. Because actually, you're away for 6-7 days at a tournament, and it could be 3 or 4 weeks on the spin, 5 maybe. It is not normal to go to a restaurant 6-7 nights a week. That's
hard
not
to eat,
normal.
Hard to eat well as well when you start doing that.
Really hard because, you know, you go to your typical restaurant, there's some nice sauces on there. Oh, there's a little dessert menu and the waiter or waitress.
You know how much I like
that.
Salt.
Yeah. I mean, two buckets is a bit
92%
over the top there.
92% of men are not affected by increased salt consumption. So I just think it's really important we don't guilt trip people with how much salt they eat. There is a 92% chance. It's on our pod now, so it is. But you can have that.
It's official.
Yeah.
It's official. I love that.
I want to touch just briefly on goal setting as well. You talked about there's like the goals you're trying to achieve.
You do this for the amateur goal setting?
No, I think it's just a broad topic. Because I think it's easier to sort of observe into the professional game, but it applies for the amateur. You know, I suppose some of the pros will have goals in their mind, right? That are, and I don't know how you'd recommend people do goal setting, but there must be players who have become very attached to a goal of, I want to be world top 50, or I want a PGA Tour card, or I want to get out of the challenge tour, which must make it, I sense that then creates a bit of an obstacle when you reach it, because you've given yourself a goal that you've now achieved and it's like, where do I go from here? Is there some truth in that?
Yeah, there is. Regarding goal setting, my philosophy is I work with two types of goals, outcome and process goals. Outcome are great. They're important to some people. They're not to other people. And this is the beauty. Everything's individual. So if you write down an outcome goal and it really doesn't have an impact on you, doesn't excite you, doesn't inspire you, doesn't give you a little bit of motivation, what's the point in writing it down? You're just ticking a box. But if you write a goal down and you go, yeah, that whets my appetite, and there's a bit of inspiration there. You're feeling a bit of motivation. Motivation, don't get too carried away with that because it always fluctuates. People are always highly motivated 1st of January to the 3rd of January because of eating too much, drunk too much, and they're like, oh yeah, let's have it. 1st of February, they're going, can I cancel that gym membership, or, please?
Monday, Tuesday is good motivation days. Thursday, Friday, not so much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why people turn to alcohol.
Can't start a gym routine on a Monday.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah, Friday, exactly. Wait till Monday. You've got to start
on a Monday, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or if you're really struggling in life, you go, I'll wait till the 1st of the month. Jesus, only the 2nd of the previous month.
Yeah. So you're happy with like outcome-orientated goals, provided they're challenging and they would be genuinely satisfying to you if you got them.
Yeah, I have a number of goals that I set in 2009. I've got 7. I think it's 7 left. For the job I do. Yeah. There's about 40 goals I set.
Cookie Jar Golf Podcast, one of them.
One of them is the biggest one is to help coach a player to world number one. That's the biggest one I've got. Yeah. And the other ones are close to that. They're going to help that player get to that place.
Yeah.
But I've ticked off a hell of a lot. Yeah, I've got about 7 left. Don't get me wrong, the 7 are big. Like a male major winner is one of them. I'm so bad at remembering. Or in the words of my wife, it's not memory, it's recollection.
But these are things that would give you like, that would really move me if I got there. You know, so you're happy having those. And then you'll have process goals that are like...
There's a more existential problem with outcome goals because they apply throughout every process. There's a more existential problem with outcome goals. And you find this with Olympians or something.
Yeah.
That... If once you reach the top of the mountain, there is literally nothing left to do. So you can win gold medals and then get depressed because it's like, well, what do I do now? I've done that.
100%. And that's the danger with outcome goals. If they are everything to you, which if you want to be a great and you want to be a world number one or whatever, you kind of have to sacrifice other things to achieve that. You've just got to be very aware of what you're doing there. So you don't come out the other end just done. Game over. But outcome goals do have their place. I do believe in them. That doesn't mean that everybody that I work with believes in outcome goals. However, whether you believe in outcome goals or not, the most important thing is the process goal. You can make progress with or without an outcome goal. It helps if, like I said before, if there's a bit of inspiration, a bit of motivation, a bit of direction as well of where you want to go, it might help align your daily behaviors, your daily plans, etc. Wonderful. But your process goals are key. So what are the key ingredients that you're going to do on a regular basis that you can control that are going to take you towards your outcome goal? That is the bottom line. That's the crux. And that's where I firmly believe that everybody should identify what those are. Whatever terminology you want to use, process goals, what are your key ingredients, what's your daily routines, what are the three things that you want to achieve today, what's your priority? Not priorities, I don't like the plural of it. When that word was brought out, it was priority, it was one thing. I don't like how we go. 12
swing thoughts.
At least.
Yeah, I was tired from listening
but
to
that. That was the thing you said. You've got too much.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people, it's okay to have 3 or 4 things to work on, let's say in your swing or whatever. Just work on one at a time. Don't work on all four. Don't try and do all four well together. That will come. That's your outcome. That's your outcome goal, but your process is this or this.
Well, you did like a little horse whispering thing with me, didn't you, on the 17th, where I'd been sort of hacking around Moortown and I'm trying to obviously change a few bits and bobs, and you're just like, well, what's your number one thing you want to do? And then I told you, you said, well, do you know how to do it? I said, well, I think so. And then he said, well, just do it then. And that's it. That one thing, just do that one thing. And it is amazing when you just clear the mind of other, there's so many moving parts, aren't there, that you're just trying to.
Yeah, there are. All we did there really, Tom, was just shine your spotlight on one thing. We all have a spotlight, and whatever you shine it on is going to grow it. It's going to give it energy. And what you were trying to do is shine one spotlight on 4 things. So then it's just doesn't know what it's doing. So what we did is go, okay, what's the most important thing to you? And you told me what your number one thing was, and I said, okay, just go do that one thing. Well, so, oh, I can shine my spotlight on one thing. And then the message to the brain is a lot clearer. And the computer goes, ah, okay, I can do that for you. It's not always going to give you a result. It gave you a fantastic, hell of a golf shot. It gave you a wonderful result then, but the next two or three shots might not have been good. I mean, actually, they were really good, but you might not have had the results, but it doesn't mean that the process was wrong.
Mm. It's hard. I think that's the hard bit, isn't it? Because is to trust the process when it's not behaving.
Mm. Absolutely, because it goes back to we want to see the results. We want to see a good result. And a lot of people are too quick to change a coach. They're too quick to change how they're doing something, and because they didn't see the results. And it's important to engage and shine your spotlight on the process and give it time. Give yourself a decent amount of time to get something right.
Does it, like, when you see people change putters every 5 minutes on tour, is that something your face?
Really? You see a lot of that.
Do I see a lot of that?
Do you see a lot of, like, stuff going in and out of the bag and you're like...
Oh. So my face changed because I thought of one person and I love him to bits, but he's a flipping nightmare. He's a nightmare.
Come on, who?
Yeah, I can share this. Marcus Armitage.
The bullet.
The bullet.
Yeah.
Why do they call him the bullet? You've kept that story from us until now.
Oh,
I thought it was because he absolutely munches the golf ball.
I mean, in fairness, he's a ball striker. He is a ball striker. And there's a lot of good ball strikers out there. But I think a lot of those players out there would appreciate how good he is with that.
He munches the ball, does he?
Yeah. It's impressive. And obviously, I've known him for a lot of years, like going back to our county days before he turned pro. And even then, he was impressive. But he, you know, there's a lot of tour players out there who were always golf. That it was always going to kind of find its, they're always going to find the way out to tour. He, and I mean this with so much love and respect, he's not meant to be a tour player. So the fact that he's out there is a hell of an achievement. Now we're out there, we've been out there for a few years now, and the discussions that we have about where we want him to go, there's some big outcome goals. Mm. We've identified the process goals with the daily plans, etc., that he has to apply himself to. The challenge for us is just keeping him on that and not getting distracted. And I've not forgotten about your question about the bullet now. But one of the stories was, I mean, he changed his putter. It's frightening. And I think he's, you know, when you see a good
every
putter,
couple of tournaments.
Every couple of tournaments, I wish. Hellfire.
Really?
I wish. Oh, yeah, this lad's known to come in and switch a putter the next day. Yeah. Scary. Shit. And you know when you see a good putter and the putter just looks good in the hand?
Mm.
It's almost an intangible thing. Some people might hear this and be like, what are you on about?
No.
But there is. The ones who know, you just look at someone, you go, my God, it just... It's like they were born with a putter in their hand. I believe that about Marcus. And that's, I don't blow smoke up anybody's backside. I don't sugarcoat things just for the sake of it sounding nice. I'm being genuine when I say that. Looks good. But he's always flitting. And I'll never forget last year, I think it was around Denmark or Switzerland time. And he was was not listening or paying attention and kind of gone off. And he rang me and he was upset. And he said, man, I don't know what to do with my putting. And I said, right, you've been to see him. All great coaches, really good. But clearly there's something you weren't keen on or whatever. Right, I'm going to meet you at Fulford. This is the date that we're meeting. I want you to bring every single putter with you. Every single one that you've got. I want you to bring every single training aid. So he's like, wow, are you sure? It's like
an Arctic lorry turns up.
Oh God, yeah. Honestly, I thought a band had come into town. So he's like, right, okay, fine. So anyway, I'm driving there and he rings me, he's on his way. He's like, mate, I'm really sorry. I'm going to be about 15 minutes late. I was like, don't stress, we've got all day. And Marcus is, that's unlike him to be late. And he always finds a way to meet you. He always finds a way to do anything, whatever time of day it is. If I say to him, mate, I can only do 5 a.m, he'll be there.
Yeah.
Whereas there's a lot of players who I work with, he'll be like, oh no, oh, I don't like to do before 9. And you're like, you never hear the best ones doing that.
Yeah.
They'll always find a way. But
he's committed.
Unbelievable. Scary committed. There's one holiday in the last 5 years that I've been on where I've not heard from him.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And he knows I'm away. but he's in contact, and part of me's like, oh, I wish I hated you more, because that
just
guys
go way
call.
Back. It's like a real good friendship,
yeah,
as well.
It is.
Like, you're on it.
It is a good friendship, yeah, and it's been on and off and what have you. But he's, you know, he has got a good heart. He maybe doesn't come across. He comes across a bit brash or whatever, or says some things where you go, it's a bit cringeworthy. But his heart's in the right place, and he has his desire to succeed is unbelievable. But anyway, so he rings me in the car, and he's like, he's a bit emotional and what have you, and I'm like, look, mate, I've got this sorted for me. I'm going to direct you, and I've always believed that with leadership, you've got leadership is directing someone, telling them what to do. The next form is support, where you're kind of like shoulder to shoulder. So you're kind of like, you're there with them. You might direct them a bit, but they're side by side. And the final one is kind of empowerment, where you step behind, you trust someone, and you go, off you go. I'm here if you need me, but off you go. So I stepped into the direct mode then. And I said, right, I'm going to tell you exactly what you're going to do. You're not going to go off this plan. You're going to follow the exact plan that I give you, which I don't like doing, but I needed to. So anyway, he pulls up next to me in the car park, and he's got the VW Transporter.
Living the dream.
Absolutely. What a motor. And he goes, and give him a hug and what have you. I'm like, you all right? And he's like, yeah, yeah. He went, you ready for this? And I was like, yeah, just crack it open. So door comes up. I'm like that. What?
How many were talking?
I think he had 5 tour bags. One was his set of clubs, and the other 4 were just filled with putters. And I went, what? I can't.
So we're talking the region of 50-ish.
Plus.
Oh, yeah.
Plus. And I'm like, wow. This is over the course of like your career. He's like, yeah, he told me to bring everything. I was like, I can't believe that. I thought we'd be like 20, 30 puts. I went, this is just ridiculous.
60, 70 plus.
Yeah. So I said to him, I said, you see all this here? That's your brain. Just noise. Just no, no wonder you can't put as well as you want to. It's got all that noise, all these options that you're changing.
You're thinking about it. It's like, oh, I don't want that one.
Exactly.
Oh, no, I had that one. You're thinking back to outcome.
You are.
I played well with that actually there.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is back to outcome, but it's also looking at, oh, if I change that, I'll be fine. No. Internal, mate. You need to ask yourself a question. Am I doing everything internally well before I start looking at the externals? So anyway, we're going through. I said, right, in 20 minutes, we're going to have 2 putters for you. So we went, started going through them, taking their covers off, and he's like, putting his, what was I doing with that? Get rid of that. So I'm passing them, and he'd say, no, not for me. And I went, pass me that back here, please. So I put the head cover back on, started putting them to the side of me. Anyway, we finish, and he's got like 5 putters there. And I said, right, 2 out of there. And he goes, these 2. And I says, that's fine. We can deal with that. It kind of ticks your box to mess about a little bit, but we're only messing about with one other. So those are going to be in your hands more often than having all of these in your hands. He turns around and he goes, what's that? What are those there? I went, there for me to pick. That's a thank you to me. I've never asked you for anything in all the time that we've known each other. He's like, oh, yeah, that's fine, mate. Yeah, no worries. He wasn't going to argue with that. That's one of them.
You have to put like
today.
A warning. You have to go out to the tour trucks and say, do not give Marcus Armitage another putter.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
well,
it's like
a
gambling
drug dealers,
it's like going to the drug dealers. You must not sell this man any more drugs.
Yeah, literally it was. I spoke to the guys and said, he's got to be banned. And it comes from a good place, but it's very unhelpful. So then he got his daily plans and I said, right, these are the only things that you're doing. And he did them over and over and over. And then of course, showing that consistency on a daily basis, giving him something to shine his spotlight on and go, I'm sorry, in this instance, there are no options to do anything else. He has his stuff from his swing coach that he works on. I don't get involved with that. But I said, this is how you're going to do that and develop that. And then a few weeks later, obviously, starts trending a little bit and then just misses out in the Alfred Dunhill in Scotland. He had a second there and finished the year well. And then kind of come out this year and he wasn't well last week in South Africa, a week before he had a 4th and what have you, and he's just getting back on his feet. Yeah. But yeah, that's why my face dropped anyway. Long story.
If a tour player hires a physiotherapist, there is a clear definition of success. The end of the session, they're better.
Or, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if they hire a chef, they get food.
Yeah.
With a golf mental coach. I love a mental coach because I'm a mental coach. With a mental coach.
He's mental.
How yeah. difficult is it to quantify success as yeah, you doing yeah, a good
yeah.
job?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So a swing coach can show a split screen. This was you 2 months ago, this is you now. And you go, oh, well, there's the improvement. You can see it with your two eyes. Like a physio or a strength trainer or whatever, they can do the same. Look at your body shape there, look at this now, or that injury, that pain that you had there has now gone. So it's really black and white. It's really easy to see. I can't cut you in half and go, oh, look at how this is functioning now. Look at this. So that's the bit that makes it challenging to get people to stick to something for long enough, but also trust what they're doing. You have to really get a buy-in, and that's where somebody has to, you can't, I sell myself to other people through the results that I have. I just focus on the people that I work with and have the results, and then questions are asked and then that rolls out. Can't sell, I'm not going to sell a false promise because I don't know the person that I might be working with or anything. I don't know what they're going to come to the table with. I'm only as good as a person in front of me and the willingness that they show. So you need to have that buy-in, but also the trust in the relationship as well. You know, you develop that trust. They need to know that that you've got their back a little bit, but also that you're providing with information that's going to help them. And what tends to happen, I found this time and time again, is it's almost out of nowhere. You play and you come off and you go, oh, God, I was good out there mentally. Mental performance was good. My technical performance is there. Physical performance is good. I'm looking after my body, but mentally I was sharp out there. Actually, for an amateur, it might be, my God, I actually enjoyed my golf again. Because a lot of amateurs who play for a hobby, by the way, they choose to play this for enjoyment, yet they've not enjoyed playing for X amount of years or months. So they might come off and go, oh my God, that did help. I enjoyed it. I let go of
it
results.
It really does. Or, when you feel sharp and you feel, I think it's like you're just feeling resilient out there. Certainly for me, like I always feel like now, because you've seen there's so much disaster in pyrotechnics in my game, but like, you know, years ago I was not resilient enough to it. And it's like, I try and think about that in my head as being like, oh yeah, I'm more resilient to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you start with a blank canvas on the first tee every single time that you play. And it's up to you what picture you paint. It's your picture that you're painting. So what do you want the picture to look like? Do you want it to be kind of miserable and dark colors? Or do you want it to be bright, vibrant? What do you want it to be like? And a lot of that picture is driven by what goes on internally, the thoughts that you have, the self-talk that you have, how you apply yourself with your steps at the ball, the decisions that you make, etc. And it's about taking that out there. So if you put yourself under pressure on the golf course and you have stressful walks instead of stress-free walks, well, it could be decision-making. So get yourself out there and go, I'm going to pride myself on good decisions. And then you come in, you go back home, you sit home and you have a coffee or you have a beer or whatever. And you look at it and you go, right, I'm going to go round. How many good decisions did I make out there? And you go, I made 60%
sometimes
good decisions.
Though, like weird, like you can mask bad decisions with like good outcomes.
Yeah.
Do something stupid, but it sort of kind of worked. But
yeah,
who's under more stress when you're out there trying to compete at a major championship under the biggest spotlight, or you know somebody who's really close to losing their tour card, playing on small tours, and thinking because I think it's easy to gravitate to the big names and the big championships, but some of the guys playing, and you've played Euro Pro and things like this, people have got a 8 month window here before it's like the dream's over.
Yeah,
pressure must be unreal, and they're also not at a level where they're maybe as accomplished mentally to deal with that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. I think a lot of it is what's your perception of something, how do you perceive it, and you know, do you perceive potentially losing a tour card with three events to go as stress? Do you perceive it as that, or do you perceive it as opportunity? Equally, do you go into a major championship weekend, one shot behind the lead? And do you perceive that as a stressful situation? It depends how you see it, really. It depends on the lens that you're looking through. Absolutely. You know, in people talk about nerves, for example, on the first tee. And if you look at it purely physiologically, nerves are an increased heart rate, blood pumping around the body a little bit faster. If it pumps that fast, then you can get a little bit of a shaking sensation. Well, if I described excitement to you, that would be the same. Increased heart rate, blood pumping around the body a little bit more, maybe a little bit of a tingling sensation. Now, again, depends what excitement is. So those two are the same, really, physiologically.
Self-talk then interprets into good or bad feeling.
Absolutely. But also the lens that you look at. Do you look at it and go, oh, I'm actually excited about playing today. This should be good. These are a good feeling to have. So nerves are perceived culturally as, oh, that's not good. Oh, he's nervous. Actually, nerves are a sign that you're ready to compete. And there could equally be excitement. But because we're taught to look at it through a lens and go, the lens of nervousness, not good. Actually, nervousness could be excitement. So it depends how, what angle you're looking at it from.
And do you see in the major championship stage, do you see that the requirement for just absolute mastery of your own emotions and your own composure is significantly elevated? So if you looked at the cognizant or whatever, the skills required to perform in that stage are calibrated such, but then when you look at a major championship, mental composure and resilience presumably then massively over indexed all of a sudden. Is that kind of how you'd look at it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you take any, you know, we're talking about that high level now, but you, a Sunday afternoon in a golf tournament, if you're in contention, it becomes more mental. It comes about your mental performance and what you're going to deliver there on those back nine holes. Because everybody who's in contention is clearly hitting the ball well. So your technical performance is there. It's not all of a sudden going to go, but it now becomes a mental game. Who's going to control themselves a little bit better? Who's going to manage their emotions? Who's going to get over a poor putt or a poor drive quicker than anybody else? Who's going to commit to the target? Who's going to maybe take on a little bit of a risk, but be freed from the outcome of that risk? Who's going to deliver mentally for the last two and a half hours of the golf tournament? That for me is a big thing. I had that at Harbour Town a couple of years ago with a player. That's what it boils down to. What's your mental performance like on the back nine? And that was a big sharp lesson for him. But then you look at like a major, why does a major become a little bit more of a mental performance? Because the challenge is there. The challenge is tough. You know, you go out, you stand on that first tee here at Moortown. The course designer wants you to look at the bunker down the left. He wants to distract you from where you want to go. The bunkers around greens, they're there to distract you, to take you away, whether you label them as hazards or whatever you want. So is your attention getting suckered by the out of bounds fence down the left? Is it getting suckered by the water hazard? Because if it is, well, course designer's done his job. He's taking you away from what you want to do. And major championship golf requires a high level of golf shot. Outcome wise. So mentally you need to be on point, but then because it's going to take so much out of you mentally the week of a major, that's where it comes back around. Everything links together. It comes back around to how good's your rest? How good's your rest? Remember Augusta 2 years ago, playing basketball in the driveway. Got to do that. You got to do that.
Really?
You've got to step out of that tournament, that performing bubble. Because if you try to stay in it all week, you're going to be game over.
You burn out.
Yeah, 100%. Burnout's a result. It's not a process. It's a result of things happening over and over again.
You've expended way too much energy up the front and you're like, done now.
Exactly. Absolutely. So we have to, before we get to the result of burnout, it's only like when somebody says, oh, I feel overwhelmed. That's a result of certain things happening, allowing that buildup of X, Y, Z. So we have to manage that a little bit better.
I feel burnt out on it. Fairly daily basis, so I don't know what my process is going wrong. Can we, you've been far too generous with your time, Duncan,
no, but
can we
in
the last sort of 5, 6, 7 minutes,
yeah, fine.
Maybe do an agony ant session for the average golfer?
Go for it.
Okay. How does the average golfer on a Saturday, plays once a week, how do they have a better time on a golf course?
First of all, I would write down what that means to you. I can't give one answer because everyone's different. Some people want to play good golf. Your Saturday golfer, pretty much all of them, will want to play good golf to their degree. Other people go, I am not interested in that at all. I'm interested in good company, good conversation. So write down what a better time is to you. That's what I would say. And literally, when I say write it down, I don't mean just sit and say it in your head. I mean, write it down.
Yeah, you've got a little book you carry around, is it? It's just over there, isn't it?
Yeah.
You actually write a lot of stuff down, don't you?
Yeah, I do write a lot of stuff down. Yeah, I have to, mainly because my memory recall is horrific.
so write it down.
Write it down in front of you. that would be your individual answer. How would you get more out of your game? How would you, what was it again?
How would you have a better time on a golf course?
Have a better time. So it's going to be an individual answer. So write that down in front of you. And then your next question might be, what one, maybe two things could I do to achieve that? Because that's an outcome.
Mm. So if you've got a goal for then to say, right, I just want to play to the best of my abilities.
Yeah.
And talk, you know, maybe go towards like just shutting off swing thoughts. And how would you advise just getting round a golf course?
Yeah. So if you're taking lessons or you're working on your swing, I do this, and it's probably one of the most common questions that I have, you know, oh, what's your take on swing thoughts? I'm like, that's fine. Take a swing thought out there. What I ideally would advise is a swing feeling. A feeling is down in the body. A swing thought is up, neck up. So thoughts reside here. Feelings reside here. And I am a big believer in let's quieten the thoughts. To try and take what you've done on the range or from your lesson and turn it into a feeling. And a good way to do that is close your eyes and make the move that you would like to make or that you're working on. What's the feeling in the body? What's the sensation? Is it that the upper right arm is more connected to the body on the way back? Is it that, you know, the wrists don't hinge as quick as they used to do? What's that feeling? Take that one feeling out on the golf course. I think when you get into the area of 2-3 swing thoughts or feelings, just the input into the brain can become a bit clouded. And we don't want that. Just take one out there. It's lovely to have the idea of, oh, I'm going to take them all out with me. That's just complication and it's noise and it's going to take away from
because you need to play potentially. Free. You need to be.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why it's so difficult. You know, I find things like, for example, club championships.
Yeah.
You know, which for a golfer of my ability is like, that's the sort of the big event of the year or whatever. And I find that an incredibly difficult day.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
Your usual performance would be like
83, 72.
83, yeah. 83, yeah, 71, yeah, yeah. 72.
And I know that. And it's very uncomfortable. And then you end up sort of like reinforcing it in terms of how you talk to people and everything like that. I think there's that whole thing where you just get tightened up. And you know, I mentioned play Valderrama last Friday. It's another course. You find yourself playing with a steering wheel and you know, to play good golf, you have to play with the throttle. You've got to play aggressive out there.
Yeah.
Even if you're not making really aggressive targets.
Yes.
You've got to play aggressive in terms of the shots.
Be aggressive to your target.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that you're always going at the flag. You might have a wedge in your hand and you're going 30 foot left of the flag. That's a rare thing probably, but in that rare instance, still be aggressive to your target. Be committed and aggressive to your target. Try and hold it. Every time you go to your chosen target, try and hold it.
Hogan used to say he could chip flat out from 15 yards. It was like he'd play full aggressive. Swing. Yeah, they just like built, but like you'd play aggressively at it, you know? I think so many golfers, I find, myself included, close up under what is perceived by them to be a bigger moment. And like you say, the thoughts, that's a really interesting point about the feelings versus the thoughts.
Doubt and indecision are the biggest killers on the golf course for poor golf shots. Stood there on a par three going, oh, it's 5-iron. Oh, should it fire? No, just hit 6.
It's back to that resignation. Now, just back to that feeling of complete. One sort of parting question, I suppose. The zone is something that we all talk about where we have that stretch, like you have that 18-hole round and you're like, I'm not even thinking, I'm playing on autopilot, I'm flagging everything. I feel like I could, you know, I'm going to knock every putt in.
Mm.
What's happening when you're in that space?
You're 100% absorbed in the present moment. There's no outcome to it. You just literally, you know, some people use in the zone, that's been around for a long time. Some people call it flow, but ultimately it's just 100% absorbed in this one task. There's no next task. It's just right here, right now. Whatever action that is. And you are just doing that, not for a result. You are just literally going through the process of that. And that's where everything comes back circle. It comes back in, just do this well, do step one well, do step two, do step three, do step four, and repeat it over and over and pride yourself on
that. Obsess on those little things that I'm making a good decision. That's how I'm picturing it. Right, that's the field.
It's now also, it's amazing when you look at how like your score over a string of holes when you're not counting your score over a string of holes.
Yeah.
Where you just like talking to your mates, hit a ball, go up, hit the ball again.
Yeah.
And then you look back, actually, I've just made four pars and a birdie. Whereas if you're like, right, I need to par this, it's a completely different beast than just like, hit the ball, have a chat, hit the ball, have a chat.
Absolutely. Well, look at halfway house is prime example for your Saturday golfer. Get to halfway house. Oh, I'm at 200 handicap here. And then the stories start. Oh, tell you what, if I can just get back in level to my handicap, I'm going to be down to so-and-so.
My handicap will change.
Don't blow up because you blew up 2 weeks ago. Right, if we can get to... Right, we'll get through 12 and 13. We'll get through those fine because they're the ones that are blow up.
Happens. If you're still in the halfway house, then it's like, oh, I'm actually a bit nervous. Should we have a pint? Yeah, let's have a pint. I'm a bit nervous now.
Yeah. You've just said
I'm going to make really good decisions out here. Play with total commitment. And if I shoot 100 on the back nine, it doesn't matter. And we're talking to a guy here who's first ever round of golf. He shot 100 and what?
It was 168 here.
168 here. Yeah. That was your first round of golf.
I'll be honest, I don't think my dad was too impressed.
I think we could give you three laps out there and you would knock up 168 now.
Yeah, it was. I'm sure of it. I remember going off the LOTs and they were just kind of, just on this top tee.
Your first ever round of golf here as a 13-year-old, 168.
You've got a bit better.
You've come on.
Yeah, I've done all right, yeah.
Take the wins.
But it is, one thing you were saying there, Sam, was about your club championship. That'd be expectation. Yeah. It's a bit of a, you know, I don't know the ins and outs and full information, but the expectation, that's why, and the reason that I know that is because, or have a good idea of that, sorry, should I say, is because of how much better your second round is compared to your first. Because you're almost turning up going, right, come on, let's have it today. Let's do this. This is it. And I always say a man with no expectations is never disappointed. Because if you have the expectations up here at 100%, you can never better those. You can only match them. So you're not giving yourself a chance to actually pat yourself on the back and go, well done today.
Yeah.
You lower those expectations. You give yourself a chance to pat yourself on the back and feel proud of yourself. But if you have them up here, all this here is potential disappointment. Because if you don't meet your expectations now, we have this with other people. We have expectations in other people that we come across in life, that we share our lives with, whatever it might be. And if they don't match them, we feel disappointed. So what I always say, and somebody asked me this last week, actually, at the event, and I said, they said, what's your take on managing expectations? And I said, well, I'm not a massive fan of managing expectations. I'd rather eliminate them. But we have to understand if we eliminate something and take it out, we have to replace it with something. So then it's about replacing it with standards of performance. What are your standards that you want to deliver on a daily basis? The standards might be your steps. It might be your preparation. If you're a tournament player, it might be just warming up before you go play. It might be sitting in your car and just having 5 minutes before you get out of your car in the car park of just three affirmations of, I'm going to enjoy today. Mm. I'm going to have good conversation. And I'm going to notice three things out on the golf course to do with nature,
you know,
whatever.
Why that's, I've adopted that. And I'm actually really, really, really good at that. But nothing to do with golf, my golf. I intentionally have zero expectations of any golf course. I don't do any research. I just turn up and I want to experience it. And I want to just find out about a golf course.
Yeah.
And every time I've gone into a golf course, if I went and played Cypress Point, the best golf course on the planet.
You naturally expect it to be good.
I would expect it to be the best golf course on the planet. And like, I've never thought of it the way you're saying it. It can only ever be, it could meet the best golf course on the planet. But anything other than that, it would be like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Whether you go see your favorite artist on stage
is a completely different beast, isn't it?
Absolutely. It really is. We have expectations for everything. You know, you get a nice car, you expect it to start every time. It's true, isn't it? You know,
you do actually.
You go to a nice restaurant, you expect it to be good. And if the service is poor, you're left disappointed. Is it the service that was a problem, or is it the expectation that was a problem? Who knows? It'll be different in every situation. But expectations sometimes leave us a little bit more disappointed than we needed to have been. So I always say for yourself, and again, it's not just a golfing skill, this. You can use this in life. Where are your expectations with different things? With family members, where are your expectations? You know, most not most, but a lot of families only meet up at Christmas. There's a reason for that, because they don't really get on. So then they meet up at Christmas and they're like, oh, it'd be different this year. Nope. Same, still crap. Yeah, exactly. And but is it them, or is it your expectations that you had of them? In golf, what's your expectation? Is it the expectations that you set in, or is it actually your golf? Who knows? I don't know the answer to that, but looking at it through that lens could be maybe a little bit more helpful. But what I would say is, let's try and eliminate expectations, club championship, and go, right, what are my standards? One of your standards, if it's, is it 36 holes in a day?
Yeah.
Mm. Right. So one of them might be hydration and food on the golf course, because 36 holes. That. Right. Okay. So if you pour it.
And also, I really want to win it. And I really, really want to win it. And it's like, yeah, and I'm not expecting to win it, but I'm like, you're so wedded to that. Whereas if I just go and play on a typical Saturday, I will show up as a much better version of myself, because
I'd take that a step further. I think you're better on a Thursday evening than you are on a Saturday.
Yeah, I'm not like a disastrous compared to
but you know what I mean?
But like I look at it as one step further. And I suppose that's the danger with, you know, some of the elite players as well. We're sort of, it's touching on repetition, but you know, you look at the likes of Rory or whatever, and he's, you know, there's clearly so much expectation that's almost placed upon him. You know, Masters,
absolutely,
the world expects him to turn up again in a couple of weeks and win that bloody tournament. And obviously he wants to do it.
Yeah.
But and it must be unbearable expectation. Port Rush, great example with Rory. Oh, shot the course record here in the north of Ireland or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to absolutely piss this, no problems.
Yeah.
No. And then all of a sudden, first hole, it's like, oh, crikey, we're in trouble here.
100% The expectations are can be they're ultimately a huge distraction from what you can control, because the expectations are all aligned to results. They're all aligned to outcome, and like we said before, that's fine in terms of your goals, in terms of aspirations, inspiration, etc. But it comes back to, what are your ingredients? What are the key ingredients that you're going to mix on a daily basis to bake your cake? That's what it is. So next time you go play club championship, your low hanging fruit perhaps is a little bit of hydration. Take something just to, I don't know, whatever it is, a banana, something to eat on the golf course. Energy levels are going to be important. 36 holes is a long time out there. You want to make good decisions towards the end of both rounds, especially in the afternoon. So if you want to do that, well, that's going to help fuel us a little bit better. It also might be that you actually don't come in the clubhouse and discuss about the 2-3 footers that you missed in the morning with everyone else. You might go, you know what, I'm going to take myself off quietly and sit in my car and just remind myself. There's certain levels instead.
Certain levels that Sam won't do.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
But no, you're right.
So, but it is that it just replace it with standards. What three things that you want to do well in the club championship next year that you'd like to do well, and identify them and go, you know what, that's what my club championship is. It's not about the name on the board. It's about, I'm going to do them well.
He wants to win it, and he wants to win it.
Yeah, it's all right to say that as well, by the way. I think it's great to say that. You're identifying what you
want to
do.
No, I don't feel like
an
idiot. Obviously, I want to win it. I'm not the best golfer there, but I think it's, like you say, you orientate the goals around, actually, I want to come off the 36th hole feeling like I've got lots of energy still.
Yeah.
And I want to go out there and feel like I'm just totally in love with the process around hitting golf shots that day.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. See how many times you can do that.
And playing at a good cadence. And if I do those three things, I'm probably going to play reasonable enough golf.
Yeah. And at least you drive out the driveway going, you know what, I gave myself a chance there.
If I turn up saying, God, I just want, I've got to chip well today. You're like, well, we're going to have a problem here.
Yeah, exactly. Because in there, it doesn't, what's that? I want to chip well.
It's also different, like, it's interesting that you say
that
about...
It's therapy for you and me, this has.
Well, no, it's interesting you say that about food and hydration on Club Champ Day. I mean, that should be something that shouldn't be on just a special thing because it's Club Champ Day, because that in and of itself...
Absolutely.
...is changing a variable that could change how your mind works.
Yeah, oh, 100%. I mean, that's our fuel, isn't it? Mm. Our cars don't run without fuel. When we pull into a gas station, that's what we're doing. We're topping
America
the car
too
up
long
with...
You have.
Hey,
you've been
gas
in
station.
Too long.
Did I? Oh my days! The petrol station. When you pull into a petrol station,
you've forgotten your roots.
Oh, that's disgusting.
You're going to be doing writing soon.
I remember Duncan before he changed.
God damn!
That was a lot of fun though today. I really enjoyed that. It's been good fun. We enjoyed it out there. It's good fun. Good fun playing golf.
Oh, it was brilliant.
And I feel like I learned a stack as well.
Cool.
And Mortown's incredible, Nick, considering the weather we've had over the last few months. It was Greensville pure. And,
yeah, it was good fun.
And hopefully Eric goes well this weekend.
That would be lovely. That would be
nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be nice, yeah. He's doing good things.
Duncan, good. Doing good things. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Watch this.